Hi again, folks. You've tuned into NTI's Japan Real Estate Property Investment Podcast. Great to have you with us today. We've got a special treat for you because with us today on the show is Natalie Adams, a former Japanese equity research professional who started a popular podcast focused on Japan's equity market. You can tune into it for free at www.gemchat, that's J-E-M for Japan Equity Market Chat, all one word, .com. After having worked in Tokyo, London, and New York, Natalie returned to her native Canada to be with family and decided to move into a creative field that she's wanted to try for a long time, filmmaking. So now she's successfully combining both of her areas of interest, media and the Japanese equity market. Her current listener base is composed mainly of former clients and colleagues, as well as anyone else interested in this arena, who now have a regular and knowledgeable audio source for ideas and information about this exciting market. Natalie, thanks so much for joining us today. First, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where did the interest in media come from?
Well, I got into film production when I met my husband, as that was his line of work. He was working on a movie at the time, and so I learned and, I picked up a few basic things. I researched and wrote a documentary project of my own, and I also helped on a project on the Korean War for veterans. His company then moved on to TV, and I didn't really have much involvement in that. But then we were trying different things with that, and then that's how I got into podcasting. I actually at first didn't think that I could do a podcast, but then I realized that it's more interesting when the host doesn't speak a lot and lets the guests speak for themselves. Oh, so I'd been doing equity research on my own for some select clients, but it was pretty slow and it wasn't very efficient. So then I got the inspiration to combine the two interests. I enjoy writing and I think I have a curious mind. So yeah, it was just sort of a very natural progression to combine the two interests.
Well, that's interesting. Those two interests being media and Japanese equity. How did you end up involved with Japan in the first place?
Well, after graduating from McGill, I went to work in Japan for NEC in their semiconductor division. And that experience led me to investment banks who were looking for professionals who were Japanese but had experience at a Japan corporate.
Which is a bit unique, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they found it very interesting that I had, that I could speak to sort of Western corporate culture and Japanese corporate culture.
So how do you combine the two? From your experience, are there any special characteristics of the Japanese equity market that differentiate it from similar markets in Asia or even all over the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's confusing to some people who think, why is Japan different from the sort of the pan-Asian equity market, since Japan is in Asia? But Japan is considered a developed market. That means, its stock market has fully matured, like the U.S. or Europe, whereas other Asian markets are still considered emerging. So there's a completely different risk profile. And there's some way of thinking of it that Japan doesn't have the growth potential that other Asian economies have. So this is why Japan is very much a value investor's playground. And so whenever there's global growth, Japan benefits from that.
I see. And Have you seen any signs of it being different just after the global economy crisis ended? Then people seem to think that the market here has bottomed out. It's gone up and down a few times since then. Have you seen any signs of Japan breaking out from that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Abenomics people were very, very excited about, you know, is this Japan's real breakout, for, you know, versus just it's a play on global growth, like I just mentioned. People were really focusing on Japan, and I think there's still those hopes have not been fully dashed yet. I mean, it's a, you know, with the scandal and global risks at play now, people are maybe a little less enthusiastic than they were a year ago. Certainly in February, when the market corrected heavily, there was a lot of fear. But I think overall, the feeling, the optimism for Japan is quite high.
Interesting. We hear similar stuff here in our industry as well, in real estate, mainly since Abenomics. But people are always seem to be wondering if this is just fluffy, feel-good stuff. Is the confidence superficial? Is it manufactured, or is it actual change? What do you feel from your experience, your gut feelings on this one?
Well, I think people who have looked at Japan and been involved in the Japanese market for a long time were always very cautious to get overly excited, because we've seen, you know, a lot of false dawns. We've seen a lot of false hope, and the market only to correct heavily, because it seems, like I say, when global growth takes a, when it starts to go in reverse, Japan gets hit very badly. And sort of whatever's happening domestically is not enough to overcome those sort of global macro fears. But I think people think there is more to than fluffy feel-good stuff this time around, that we've seen some solid improvement to corporate governance. I think it's definitely, I've heard from people on my podcast that when they go and visit companies, they are seeing some genuine results.
Interesting. So what are popular investment strategies for people who are invested here, and why do you pursue them?
Well, like I said before, Japan is mainly a value investor's playground. When you compare Japanese corporates globally, I mean, they have a lot of cash, they have a lot of land on the balance sheet, and there's a lot of large market cap stocks very close to their book value, and they're very liquid. So this is very attractive to a lot of global investors who see the value in Japan and find that very attractive.
So for those of us who aren't too savvy with equity market terms and strategies, does that mean that people are buying shares in large, stable, blue chip type companies, as opposed to more risky, potentially profitable startup type stocks? Or what does that actually mean?
Well, it really depends on the kind of investors. So there are definitely investors out there who are looking for that growth of a small startup, and they're willing to take the risk of a smaller cap company with lower liquidity. There are investors who can only invest in very large cap liquid stocks that don't have that kind of growth that a small startup would have. But on the other hand, they have, maybe they're trading close to book value, so that's appealing to them. So it's really it really is the investment profile of, I mean, it depends on the investor profile. Small caps have done extremely well over the last year, so, you know, there's plenty of evidence that risk appetite is coming back across the board. But mainly for foreign Japanese investors, it's large liquid companies with strong balance sheets, something with a proprietary technology or a unique business model.
Interesting. So what is your typical investor or client or listener profile? Who are the people interested in Japan, and what actually drives them here as opposed to other countries?
Well, for my podcast, I'm not targeting a particular type of listener or investor. It started just as generally within my network of sell side and buy side professionals who may not get the opportunity to listen to what the other side has to say or what their competitors are saying. You know, in time, I hope to have longer segments on subjects with industry experts and non-professionals. You know, some maybe like a an industry specialist or a government official who can speak to something on the macro level.
Interesting, which I guess is where our interview from a few weeks back came in, isn't it? To give people more insights into those different industry segments.
Yes, exactly. With the podcast, I try to give investors insight outside of the normal research or due diligence. You know, as an investor, it's important to analyze from as many perspectives as possible. And I find relying on equity research to shape a view is narrow-minded. And there are often a lot of flaws with relying on sell-side equity research.
I see.
It's also getting very costly for investors to engage in third-party consultation due to the various government regulations.
So which other industries do you think your listeners may want to hear more about in the future?
I think construction, non-bank financial services, software developers.
How about real estate? Does that play a big role in their portfolio allocations? Do you what type of equities do they buy into in these sectors? Is it, you mentioned developers. How about REITs, housing companies, anything else?
Yeah, I mean, it's for foreign investors, meaning investors outside who don't have a presence in Japan. It's mainly through REITs. Apart, they do invest in single stocks, but I have to stay away from specifics. Anyway, they won't tell me specifics about what they're investing in. But there are investors who are interested in large cap developers like Mitsubishi Estate, and smaller ones like Haseko or Tokyo Tatemono. A few years ago, there was quite a lot of interest in the non-bank financials related to housing, but I think those have proven to be quite risky assets. So I'm not sure if that is still something that people are focusing on at the moment.
I see. And REITs specifically, has there been a lot of interest in them in recent years?
Yeah, REITs are obviously a good way to get into the market, real estate market in Japan, meaning because they provide the diversity and due diligence and the liquidity that investing in a single stock doesn't have.
I see. And how have the last few years played out in this aspect?
So in the last few years, the positive stock movement and Abenomics have really shifted the focus back onto Japan. It's been very welcome for people who've long been frustrated by trying to tell foreign investors that there's value to be had in Japan.
Yeah.
And the macroeconomic case, including real estate. And yield too. I mean, speaking to a lot of fixed income investors and talking about the yield that real estate in Japan provides. But I think there's still that ever-present fear that, you know, global macro concerns will take hold, the yen will strengthen, and Japan will slump back into the doldrums. And then maybe more pessimistically that Abenomics will fail. I mean, I don't think everyone can see that it's had some success, so it wouldn't be an abject failure, but, you know, maybe not as successful as everyone had hoped it would be, because we've all seen it before, unfortunately.
Yeah, especially with their current inflation targets that keep being dropped back and pushed back time-wise as well, aren't they?
Exactly. Mm. Again, these are all things that people who've looked at the market for a long time have seen before. It's just seems like to be a cycle of lowered expectations.
And how do you feel? Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball on you, but how do you see the market going in the next few years? Particular challenges, opportunities that you've got marked out?
Yeah, I mean, it's never an easy thing to forecast, but I think particularly now, it's the volatility is really concerning for a lot of investors. Particularly, I mean, I speak to a lot of asset allocators, and they're very hesitant to be too bullish in one way or the other. I think over a 5-year time frame, if you stick to value companies, and like I said, those companies that have solid balance sheets with a very good business model or proprietary technology, and maybe not exposed to global trade, and have a good domestic business, then yeah, Japan has a lot of good companies and a lot of diversity, and that's very interesting, I think, for a global investor. There's a lot of listed companies in Japan that provide lots of different domestic services. And then, if corporate governance reforms move forward or actually pick up the pace, then that will really provide the icing on the cake. But I think at the moment the real risk is global markets. Are we headed to a global trade war? Again, a weakening of the US dollar, which will implicitly cause the yen to rise, and that's never good for the Japanese equity market. As flawed as that theory is, but that is a reality, and I think so that is on the forefront of a lot of investors' minds.
So I guess insurance-wise, the best policy is probably diversity, isn't it? Different strategies, locations, or industries.
Yeah, I mean, diversity is always the most prudent thing for any kind of investing. But I think right now, probably, as I said, due to the worries over a global trade war, probably maybe focusing on something domestic that's not reliant on the yen dollar. That would probably be the focus in the probably for the latter half of the year.
Excellent advice. Thank you for that, Natalie. And thank you very much for your time. As we're wrapping up, it was a pleasure having you with us. Folks, as always, we're going to link to the Gem Chat podcast homepage in our show notes. So feel free to jump in there and subscribe to get your regular and valuable insights on Japan's equity market, as well as to our podcast, of course, if you haven't done so already. Please also feel free to comment on or share this content with anyone who may find it interesting. And until next time, from all of us here at NTI and Gem Chat, we wish you happy investing.